It is Saturday, March 29th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, the Week in Geek News, and in the second half, your questions and comments of technology. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today we're covering the Week in Geek News. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join the conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to our GeekSpeak website, geekspeak.org, ask us questions via email, or join our forums to ask us questions. This is Miles Elam.
Sunday morning on the Sunday Morning Classical Fog Lift, the Monterey Symphony with conductor Max Brigado Darman and guitarist Angel Romero performing Rodrigo's Concierto de Aranjuez. Also, Copland's Appalachian Spring and Sinfonietta by Poulenc on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This special broadcast is supported by the Barnyard Shopping Village in Carmel.
Miles, that was beautifully done. No, I was really impressed. You don't have to make funny faces. It was a lot better than I could have done. And we've only been in this for 10 years or so. 8 years, I guess. That's Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We also have Ryder Brooks. Good morning, Ryder.
Good morning.
Before we start taking calls, let's do some geek news, because I like to do that. And Miles, I really kind of want to start out... No, actually, Ryder, I kind of want to start out with the UFO thing. So...
All right.
I know it's
right. It's a little blurb. I found it on, of all places, NBC online, and somebody posted photos of alleged UFO sightings out of our local Capitola by the Sea. So, very interesting photos. If you look at them, I showed them to you this morning, and you immediately were skeptical of it, and especially when you could see little symbols that looked a lot like Klingon.
Sure.
But it's very little information on it, but it's we'll post it on our website, but so you can take a look at them. They're actually pretty high quality photos of what they're calling UFO drones.
Really high quality photos, like they process them with Photoshop or something like that.
Well, I mean, the only reason I bring this up is that apparently analysts can't disprove them at this point. So
what analysts? I'll do it.
Well. They look
cool.
Hey,
there's this big ship sitting in front of a power line. Did a bunch of people see it? No, it's photoshopped.
Yeah, and they're interesting, different angles. You know, of course, in classic fashion, they're in sharp focus, so that's kind of leaves some skepticism.
You know,
right there.
I see these things. It's like if you want to do a hoax, if you want to do modified photos and stuff, play with Photoshop and do this, you can do such an amazing job now. Would be very hard to do. And these are cool and everything, but they are out of focus.
But people that analyze photos can typically detect when they've been Photoshopped, can't they?
I don't know. If you want to do a large-scale hoax, wouldn't you just put LSD in the water supply and then start doing some public suggestions?
You know, here's the thing about that. Is it's so frustrating is that, okay, first off, all those photos, they've got the spaceship thing.
They are very well done.
They're
don't get me
center
wrong.
Of the screen, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've cropped it perfectly. And how many pictures we have? Like 5 or 10. Okay. If you see an unidentified flying object at that close range and you've got some kind of camera, aren't you going to just keep on taking photos as much as possible? So you should see it appear and then fly away, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, the whole idea behind it.
And if the photo looks like you're on a tripod?
Yeah.
Maybe.
The thing is, if we do have as many, you know, unidentified flying objects as people claim they see, why don't we have a lot more photographs of it? You know, we should have tons. I mean, everybody has a camera on them all the time. One thing I rarely talk about on GeekSpeak, and maybe it's because we cover a lot of stuff on the radio station, but I'm a pretty skeptic guy. I'm a scientifically thinking person, and that's part of being a geek to some degree. And in the past few years, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and two of them that I listen to are wonderful for this kind of thing. One is The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, and the other is Skeptoid. Skeptoid, he does about 10 minutes or 5 minutes every week, and he picks a topic, you know, you name it, you've heard about it, you name it. He talks about vitamins, or he talks about whatever, and he talks about the scientific studies behind supporting it and not supporting it. In any case, really good, Skeptoid. And then the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is very much like Geek Speak, except for instead of talking about technology, they talk about skepticism. And the lead guy is a scientist who's very smart, a neuroscientist, neurosurgeon, excuse me. And in any case, great two podcasts. They're up on our website right now. On
Speaking of yeah. medical news and skepticism, that actually reminds me of a recent report that came out referring to autism and people talking about linking with vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And it turns out after 7 years of reduced numbers of people getting vaccinations for their kids because they were worried about autism, autism rates haven't changed.
Right.
So in fact, people have changed the variable.
The rates of autism have increased. And one theory is that it's because people are more conscious of autism and they're more conscious of labeling issues with their children. In any case, though, the other thing that happened with that is that the movement against inoculations for children because of autism, the basis was it's mercury poisoning. So the mercury was removed from it and nothing changed. The rates, the increase in rate kept going.
Well,
it wasn't the mercury, and yet people are still holding on to that. That's the issue.
But not just autism has increased over that same period of time. Also, diseases that were be handled by the vaccinations have increased dramatically that time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, in any case, Skeptoid has a great episode all about vaccinations and autism. So up on our website, geekspeak.org, take a look at the two podcasts that I listen to about skepticism. I listen to a lot of other podcasts, too, but that's for another time. We have another story, Miles, actually yours, that's kind of...
Which one would you prefer?
I think the Wi-Fi one downtown that was canceled.
In Sebastopol.
Yeah, that's another good skeptic geek thing.
Many of you, I'm sure, know the town of Sebastopol. It's kind of a hippie-friendly town. I guess you might.
There's amazing pinball ranch up there, Silver Bar Ranch. If you can get to see it, he's got 500 or 600 pinball machines from the 1940s.
Right. And the city had a deal with the company Sonic.net to provide free Wi-Fi in all of downtown. Just walking around downtown, you have Wi-Fi access. And I'm actually a big advocate for having Wi-Fi at a lot of different places, including airports, and just to be able to go there and, you know, one, pass time, and also to get information that might be useful for you at the time. That's time sensitive. Now, that deal has been dropped. And the reason given was that there was a suspicion that there may be a health hazard, that the citizens of Sebastopol, or a sufficient number of citizens...
Were they doing Wi-Fi with, like, giant lead-acid batteries on telephone poles dripping onto people? Or was it a health issue with Wi-Fi signals?
They were worried about the radio signal. And this is something that I know, Lyle, that you have some thoughts about.
I'm frustrated.
So by all means, share.
You know, we should invite Don back in, Dr. Don, to talk about this. But we are bombarded by radiation, everyone, all the time. The sun spits out radiation.
And even radio waves.
And a lot of radio waves. In fact, right now you probably have, I don't know, 7 or 8, say 80 radio stations going through you at any time.
Yeah, a great example, actually, is you know when you're driving in some no man's land and your favorite radio station goes out, you know, you can't hear KOSP anymore, and it goes to static. That static is not what happens when there's no signal. That static is actually a radio signal from space.
Okay, yes, there is background radiation, but we are – okay, that's a valid point, Miles, to some degree. But because of the static quality of it, there's no medical studies that say that Wi-Fi signals have any issues with human beings or any mammals
Or rather, if you are worried about Wi-Fi, you should also be worrying about the radio station you're listening to right now.
That's right. And cell phones everywhere. And, you know, it's not just the cell phone when you're holding it. It's all over the place. Now, of course, if you're really close to the transmitter, it's a little more dangerous. But the Wi-Fi signals that are penetrating, especially for like a Santa Cruz, for a downtown
cell phone tower. The cell phones themselves are ridiculously low.
Yeah. But in any case, the Wi-Fi coverage of a city, if you put in a network, you're then having one mandated type of hardware, one company managing it. You're going to try to reduce the amount of spread because you want to be really efficient with the power usage, and therefore you're going to have it blanket, but you're not going to have a lot of hotspots. You're going to try to kind of even it out. If you don't do that, everyone and their mother that lives in the town is going to throw up a Wi-Fi point. So you're going to have just as much bombardment of the exact same stuff, except for it's not going to be managed. You won't know about it, versus it managed and all provided by the city. So it doesn't help reduce it. In fact, it makes it more confusing and cluttered. And on top of that, there is no health concern.
Right. Well, it makes it more cluttered and confused in the sense that you can't have free Wi-Fi downtown anymore. Everybody has their own little island that they have password protected.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. That was Miles Elans. We also have Ryder Brooks. We're talking about technology. And in about 15 minutes, I'm going to invite you to ask us questions and comments. And we are doing a little bit of skepticism episode. And mostly, I want to talk about why geekness and skepticism kind of falls in play. I think to be a good troubleshooter and someone that manages and understands how technology is going to work, you have to understand the scientific principle. And you have to look at things in that logical way. So, for example, people say that they have a lot of electrosensitivity and Wi-Fi points damage them. So then a group of scientists will do a study and they'll take people and they'll put a Wi-Fi base station near them and they'll say, can you feel that? And sometimes the Wi-Fi station's on and sometimes it's off, even though the LED might be reversed. And that's a great study because the person next to that doesn't know if it's on or not, unless they have electrosensitivity, if you will. And the studies that have done this don't show any electrosensitivity. Now, I'm not saying that there's definitely health effects from people that are classified as electrosensitive, or whatever that term is. And we really should have Dr. Don on here instead, because, of course, we're not medical people. But the point is that it's not because of the frequencies that are emitted from these transmitters. In any case, let's go on to something else because, of course, that's going to engage us in too many conversations or too many calls. Ryder, what's your next news story?
Next news story. Let's talk about Comcast again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. File sharing, right?
Yeah, so they've actually announced that they are... Where did that article go?
Firefox.
They are working with the company that made the BitTorrent protocol.
Well, I didn't hear that. Are they?
No, I think that's somebody else that was doing research for the BitTorrent.
No, what I've heard is that they've basically
give us the basis of Miles' research.
They bowed down to public pressure for them to basically stop their file sharing blocking tactics with the Sandvine technology and other tactics.
We've covered this story before, and we talk about BitTorrent quite a bit. I remember we talked about BitTorrent before it became a popular file sharing, point-to-point file sharing issue, but we described it a couple episodes ago. But in any case, the general idea is that if you distribute people that are downloading, so if I have a file and slowly, as I share it, other people start sharing parts of it, then all of us share the load. In any case, that can do a lot of bandwidth. It can use a lot of bandwidth, especially for the end consumer. If I'm doing a whole bunch of BitTorrent downloading, I'm sucking up and saturating my bandwidth line. And what Comcast was doing is that they noticed people that were doing a lot of bandwidth. They take a look. They kind of did some sniffing. They realized, oh, they're doing BitTorrents, and so they started sending like negative termination signals and killing the service, even though there was nothing in the contract with the customer that they couldn't do that.
Yeah, specifically, they were forging RST TCP packets, which were basically terminating their seeding connection that they're doing. They wouldn't prevent people from sharing while they were downloading, but once you've completed downloading and you were just hosting the file to seed it out to others, that's what they were killing. And supposedly only to external sources, it wouldn't be impacting other Comcast users that were trying to share your file, but anybody using it, who knows?
Right.
It, you know, highly invasive, and
so they've made a public statement that they're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, they made a statement saying that basically due to public pressure, threat of FCC action,
really angry customers.
And the thing here is that they're basically saying they'll remove all their protocols that they're discriminating against file sharing by the end of the year. So nothing really being.
Right.
You know, it's all better. It's like you're going to have to drag it out
end of the
like
year. It's so hard to turn those services off. So. Miles?
And looking this up, sure enough, Comcast has signed on with Bram Cohen's company, the guy who made the BitTorrent protocol and has a company called BitTorrent. They're working together now, and they're going to be working on a peer-to-peer file sharing within the Comcast network, probably also an answer to the Verizon.
Were you here when we covered the story, Miles?
Yes.
So it's a great thing because the thing that I love about this is that you predicted this years ago when people were getting upset about BitTorrent. You're like, the ISPs don't understand. If they use it effectively, it will reduce their load of traffic. And I mean, it's a very useful tool for an ISP.
Well, theoretically. I mean, the devil's in the details. I didn't know for sure. I could have just as easily been completely wrong like normal.
Yeah, but for this one, you happen to be right. Hey, you got to take that 10% of accuracy, man. Congratulations. Yeah. You're a genius.
Well, that's a funny about phase with Comcast, isn't it?
It is that they're now like working with. Well, it does make sense. I mean, technically it makes sense. Well, right? Because if you've got a whole bunch of customers and they want to download the free episodes of South Park, which we'll talk about in a second, if locally the Comcast network has a copy of that and is BitTorrenting it, then all of their customers can do that without actually going outside of Comcast local net and therefore reducing the amount of traffic that or expense they have.
Well, and also there was we discussed this previously, that the BitTorrent developers were going to modify the protocol to basically get around that blocking technology. They're going to change the way that they handled negotiations with seeding and whatnot, so that the way that Comcast was actually blocking it would be ineffective. So
right, and they were actually there was actually some solicitation from the general online public as well to Comcast customers test these programs and give feedback to the developers.
Because there's some crazy things you can do when you have two computers and they want to talk to each other over a network and the network's not. You just change ports and you change protocols and you hide inside other protocols. Yeah. I mean, there's so many ways to mask the signal, if you will. Let's go ahead. I just mentioned South Park, so let's go ahead and talk about that, if that's okay with you, Miles.
Sure. South Park, or the creators of South Park.
South Park is an adult cartoon, go on, about children.
That is...
on Comedy Central.
Adult-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think the geeks all like it. Is that true? Ryder, do you like South Park?
I like it.
Okay.
It is being made available for free download and legal download without digital rights management or restrictions management, no restrictions whatsoever on their site. And the reason given by the creators, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, was that they were inspired to start the site to download when they got, quote, really sick of having to download our own show illegally all the time. So we gave ourselves a legal alternative.
That's the funny thing is that you could get South Park illegally any episode you wanted. You have been able to a long time because it's in that market where a lot of highly technically savvy people like the show. And so they rip it off the television and they put it up on different places. And it was pretty easy to get the episodes.
It's beyond that because they're saying having to download their own show illegally. Because legally, it was either not available or it's such a labyrinth-like process or it's tied to a particular computer or it's Windows only.
I feel the same way, though. Last night I was setting up computers and I was in a different environment and I forgot my laptop and I wanted to show someone a picture. And I had the picture on my laptop and I have the picture on like a multiple shares and I have the picture at a home computer. But the only photos I could actually access at that time were on Flickr, were kind of public photos. It's that idea that when you put it on the internet... you have more access to it. Sure, everyone else does too, but you can get to it better. So I kind of understand Matt and Trey's idea behind putting it and making it public. The question I have is, aren't they making money on what is it called? Syndication? And how are you going to sell syndication commercials?
Based on TV or syndication online?
Sure, TV.
Well, sure, but they're on a standard cable network. As long as people have cable, they're getting paid.
Well, as long as they're buying the cable network, yeah.
Yeah,
but that's the thing is, is it an archive situation where it's, episodes quite old, or is it up to date?
That I don't know.
Okay, and when in researching this, you found out that other Comedy Central shows have done the same thing.
Yeah, it turns out that The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, the archive was freely made available online last year. I did not know that. If I had known that, I would have been watching a lot more of The Daily Show because I don't have cable.
Well, yeah, but again, is it the archive? Is it a year old or not? By the way, all episodes of Geek Speak that I've spent the time to actually archive are online. We've got, I don't know, since 2002 shows. And, man, you should hear us. You think we sound foolish now. You should listen a few years ago. Miles, The Daily Show, this is a great example. First off, let's find out before the end of the episode today of Geek Speak if these things are a week old or if they're a lot longer. But in any case, I was going to say that that's another show that I watch regularly. You know, I was talking about podcasts earlier, Daily Show and Colbert.
Yeah, as far as South Park's concerned, it looks like it's up to date.
That's amazing. So how are they making money? Because you can buy those episodes through iTunes and such. But if you can wait another couple of days and get them for free...
I don't know what the quality is like. And there are some people who want high resolution...
cartoon.
Line art cartoon.
All right, I think we got time for another couple news stories. Back to you, Ryder. Firefox?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about both Firefox 3 and Firefox 4.
But wait. Firefox 3 is in beta right now.
Yeah,
what the heck is... Okay, well, tell us about Firefox 3.
All right, so Firefox 3, it's in beta. It's beta 4 right now.
And this is a web browser that we recommend on GeekSpeak regularly.
It's a great browser. It's for Windows, it's the primary alternative to Internet Explorer.
For the Mac environment.
On any platform, great alternative.
As a web developer, it's one of those things that it's so nice to know that I can make a website that looks great on all operating systems for at least one browser. But go on. So Firefox 3.
So Firefox 3, when they moved from beta 3 to beta 4, beta 3 was kind of like for developers only.
Yeah.
But internally, their jargon changed with the beta 4, and they're like actually encouraging anybody to use it. There's lots of reports that it's pretty stable.
Yeah.
It's a great preview of, it's practically release candidate quality. I think it's coming out next month. It's pretty cool. One of the most obvious changes that they made to it is that they've more tightly integrated the user interface and GUI feel to the platform that it's installed on. Be it Linux, be it Macintosh, be it Windows, Vista, or
are you running Firefox 3 beta right now?
Not currently.
No. Miles, are you running it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and
running the beta since beta 2, I think.
Does it look more closely associated with what are you running, OS X over there?
Yes, indeed it does. Mm-hmm. It was kind of jarring because it was a major UI change between beta 2 and beta 3. But I'm getting used to it, and
Said about matching the operating system, because if you're used to using whatever application you use and the menu bars and everything are the same, and then you switch to a browser which looks very different, that can be a little jarring.
Right, they were matching the native code. In fact, it looked fairly similar to Safari back in beta 1, beta 2, and then they made some other changes so that it doesn't look at all like Safari anymore, but it still looks like a Mac app. Like, for example, the back button
Is
much bigger.
Besides that, in Firefox 3, besides it looking different, what else is going on?
It's faster. They've heavily targeted memory bugs, so it has much lower memory.
Firefox 2 definitely has a big memory bug issue.
I just checked it last night. It's like 250 megs, and it had like two things going.
It's got a new renderer in it.
Yeah, new renderer. It's got a new kind of smart the history. It's like integrated history tab with your main URL bar. It basically drops down and gives you extra information about security and summary.
Okay, so let's make it
more eye candy.
Let's make a recommendation right now. If you're in Firefox 2 right now and you're frustrated with it being bloated and whatever, go ahead and get Firefox 3.4 beta.
Well, let me tell you why I did not upgrade.
Okay.
They extension developers are often a little bit behind. So I have several extensions that I use, and that's the main reason why I like Firefox over.
Do you use Firebug?
No. What's Firebug?
Firebug's a web developer extension. In fact, the producer of Dr. Don's show, which is right before us, Charlie, I talked to him last week because he's having some trouble, and I showed him. And then this week I came in, and he's like, I have like 25 Firefox extensions, and I haven't gone to the beta yet because I love all these extensions.
Yeah.
It's so incredible. I'm like, is it unstable? He's like, yeah, Firefox a little unstable now. So that's the one thing with extensions is that you're increasing the
stability. Well, I've used them for productivity at work, and you take them away, and then I'm less productive at work.
Yeah.
And they're just usability. They're nothing developer-oriented. They're just kind of random things that aren't even worth talking about. But that's why I haven't switched to it, until basically the extension developers get on board with the new release, which presumably they're going to wait till it's official before they start working
on it. But something that is very useful for developers is the fact that there's now an integrated SQL engine in it. SQLite has been integrated, and that's where all the bookmarks, all the history, all of that is kept now. It's all single storage mechanism. It's no longer, here's the bookmark storage, and here's the history storage, and here's this storage. It's all one thing.
Well, that will be easier for developers to do extensions to work on, right?
And that has led to, for example, having an extension of cookies. So the next generation of web development is going to have that as a client-side storage mechanism as well.
Okay, wait a second. With the SQLite running as the storage mechanism for bookmarks, what other things does it run? Does it run the cache? Is that where the cache is?
I don't know. I think it might, actually.
Interesting. So could you access a cache file through a different interface?
I don't know, but there is an extension so that you can look at any
versions?
SQLite database from within the browser to be able to look through as a SQL browser.
Right, because of course it's now a Azul-enabled SQL browser.
Yes.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
SQL through JavaScript.
All right. You're listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. In just a second, Ryder's going to keep telling us about Firefox, the next version, which is 4, which is in development or being planned out. So stay with us. We are taking your calls with questions and comments at technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'm going to give out those phone numbers again in just a minute, nice and slow, so get a pen ready. Stay with KUSP for Castle College This Morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
KUSP co-sponsors the Santa Cruz Chamber Orchestra presentation of Fauré's Requiem and Mozart's Exultate Jubilate and Ave Verum Corpus, featuring the Ariose Singers Ensemble with Rochelle Bard soprano and Jason Detwiler baritone. Also on the program, Whitaker's Five Hebrew Songs and Takemitsu Requiem for Strings. Saturday, April 5th at Holy Cross Church at 8 p.m., 126 High Street in Santa Cruz. More information online at scmusic.org. 429-1973. Man, today has been the...
I'm glad I didn't have to read that one.
You were so good the first couple paragraphs, Miles. That was cold, ladies and gentlemen. Only 8 years of practice. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. That deliciously nice voice was Miles Elam. We also have Ryder Brooks. We are taking your calls and questions of technology right now. Rick Philman is waiting on the phones. And here are the numbers. 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or you can call us toll-free anywhere in the United States, I believe. The number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. You, of course, can use the internet. We do all the time. Go to geekspeak.org. You can either click on Contact Us to send us email, or you can join our forums and participate there. Of course, we welcome any geeks to participate to help us with the load of questions and comments of technology. GeekSpeak is supported by Business of Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. Ryder, what's up with Firefox 4?
Okay, so Firefox 4, it's pretty much just in a wild brainstorming phase. But they've thrown out a couple of core technologies that they'd like to include in it. One's called Prism, and it's kind of their stab at what Google's done with Google Gears, and it's essentially trying to offline web browsing and doing web applications offline, so you can basically run a website completely offline.
Yeah. And is that kind of like the Safari? I mean, Safari must have done that for the iPhone, right? Running things offline. In any case, but go on. So Firefox 4, the idea would be...
I can't tell you about the iPhone at all. You'll have to tell me about that.
It's fine, doesn't matter. what would it mean running the application offline? Meaning that you'd load the page and it would get data and it would store stuff, and then you could still use the application even if you used
lost internet. Even more sophisticated. It's probably targeted more towards web-based applications that are completely offline.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Right, and they're going to integrate HTML5, which is basically the next standard for encoding, for web encoding. Not a lot of detail on it, but it's basically, theorizing that it'll take Google Gears out of the water. It'll be obsolete with this technology that comes out. Another technology that they have is Weave, and that's going to, I think they're going to be integrating the MySQL Lite, but rather than offline, all your bookmarks.
Sorry,
all the data.
MySQL Lite?
Whatever you said.
SQLite.
Sorry. I got MySQL on my brain. My company just bought it, so.
Oh. That's right. By the way, Ryder owns Sun. So.
Yes, well, the company that I work for bought
there
it.
There you
yes,
go.
Yes. I didn't have the $1 billion handy or whatever it was to buy MySQL. Anyway, the other technology they're talking about, they're codenaming it Weave, which is basically, I think, stuff that's already been done through the use of extensions, but basically taking all your data that you have customized for you as a user, taking it off your computer and putting it on a central service site that stores all your bookmarks, all your data, all your caching, everything. So you can basically be portable and access all your same information regardless on what version.
So instead of having your settings files that you have to copy from computer to computer or sync, you'd actually have a service provider that kind of hosts
that information.
That
would be built in with supposedly.
So you set up Firefox, you log into it, all your bookmarks, everything, you're downloading the local client.
The idea of roaming profiles back in the Netscape 4 days, when you
were
able to do that, just log into any computer, and as long as it was set up that way in the Windows domain or...
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Novel.
But to me, you know, that brings up, you know, privacy bells, you know, like what kind of, they got to be using some encryption and, you know.
If they make the protocol simple enough and anybody at the web dev server could actually host it, then you could host it yourself and then security concerns a lot less can issue.
Right, and they already have extensions that
and
do
that. Yeah, there are extensions that will let you use a lot of space.
But I think it's far more pervasive in terms of what they're caching. It's not just your bookmarks and cookies. I think it's going to be...
Right, it could actually be page cache and your tab settings and all that.
Now, something very important to note about Firefox 4 is that we're not going to see that until 2009.
Right. Why are we even talking about this? So, let's take some calls.
It's just interesting. You know, talking about beta technology and alpha. This is pre-alpha. I don't even know what this is.
As soon as Firefox 3, I think one of the best, our recommended browser, if you will, for all operating systems, as soon as the 3 comes out as a final release, we will mention it on GeekSpeak.
Although Safari 3.1 is really nice, too.
And Miles has potted out. No, it's true. It is. It is quite nice. All right.
For both Windows and Mac.
From Santa Cruz... Michael, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking the call. I have a big problem. Back when my daughter was going to get married for a wedding anniversary or a present, I gave her a Sony camera, which would be the same as mine. I thought it was the same model. Turns out it's not. So the wedding proceeded, and two different people took the movie. So she
was it a nice wedding?
It was a great wedding.
Indoor or outdoor?
It was outdoor. It was on private land up in the mountains. About 400 people were there.
My goodness.
It was fantastic. So, obviously, she was
Wait a second. Yeah. With 400 people there, that's pretty much everybody you guys know, so why have video footage? Okay. In any case, go on.
Yeah. Well, the thing is I am a small-time videographer and know how to do that stuff, but I didn't realize that the two cameras I bought were separate. So, she downloaded the movies easily to her PC, and I downloaded them. Of course, I'd been doing it into my Mac. Her footage will not go from her camera into mine, so therefore we're trying to figure out how to get her clippings, her movie clips, from her PC into my Mac.
Does her camera have is it using DV tape, mini DV tape?
Let's see.
Or is it using hard?
It's the 8, I think. As I'm saying this, I should walk over because they've...
So one thing is, if the both the cameras are using mini DV, the format on there is pretty much the same.
It's they are digital. You're right.
Yeah. So it's possible you just take her tapes out of her camera, put them in your camera, and import. Then the interface is going to be exactly the same.
It didn't work. No.
Okay. So something else is going on.
And now that you speak of it, I think her tapes were a little bit bigger than mine.
Okay, they don't physically fit then.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that when you're connecting up to the PC, you're using a USB connection. Yeah, and then Apple or Mac, you only import it with a FireWire cable.
Exactly. It goes right into iMovie, too.
but both of them have FireWire cable, correct?
I think so.
And you've tried plugging that camera into your Mac?
Yes.
Through FireWire?
Yes.
That's odd that doesn't work.
I know.
I'm kind of surprised.
And then online, it didn't say anything about her model going into interfacing with a Mac.
But I can't imagine that Sony would release something that wouldn't do this. I mean, this doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm thinking that there's something else going on. But let's do this. Since you've got the footage on the PC, you can get the files over to the Mac. You might have to re-encode them if you've used something like a Windows media format. But assuming you've done like an AVI file, that's the storage medium on the Windows machine. This is the file extension on Windows, which you might have to view to open. In any case, most likely the encoding type in that AVI file. It feels like I'm talking gibberish at this point. In any case, you can probably move that file onto the Mac and have it readable. Have you tried that?
Yes.
And?
My stepson, who works in audiovisual at San Francisco State, was unable to do that too.
Wow.
So you're calling us?
Yeah, I was hoping there would be...
Wait, does he have his degree yet?
Actually, it's in music.
So, okay.
He's too busy being in a successful band right now. He should graduate this year, though.
What's the band?
Nobody's Own.
Nobody's Known. Okay, I'll take a look at it. Okay, so you've tried moving the file over. That didn't work. So that means that the encoding type of the media file, if you will, is not playable on the Mac, which is very odd to me.
Yeah, it's easy to change the code. Sometimes just by retyping the name, it'll work.
Wouldn't do that. But on the Windows machine, let's see. Geeks, you guys got some ideas on what to do here?
I'm kind of lost not knowing what the base formats are in each and why they're incompatible.
I'm drawing a blank. I'm kind of flummoxed that the FireWire connection didn't work.
That's a problem right there.
Isn't there some sort of a software out there that can read both?
Actually, about the FireWire,
we really want to get the camera to work on your computer.
Yeah.
So that's not the primary concern. But go on, Miles.
I guess I'm wondering, do you know that FireWire cable works also?
It worked.
You know, since it was several months ago we tried and the camera's not here, I feel a little lost to tell you if it did or not.
Okay. So what you need to do is figure out what the type of encoding of the video files that are on her computer, what format it's in. There's a lot of different codecs. You want to get a codec, you want to make sure that you can read on your Mac. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you can't open them right out the bat.
Yeah.
But in any case, you can re-encode those files on the PC using her editing software. So you open up her editing software, and I would do is you're going to want to play with the settings. What I would do is grab her footage, and assuming she's got some editing software on her computer, grab just a little bit of it, you know, a 5-second clip, right, and export that as a certain encoding format, right, and then try it on the Mac. And do that a few times until you finally get a codec that is working. And then you do the full, you know, 4 hours of footage, whatever that she has.
Okay.
So that's the way I would do it, unfortunately.
Okay.
The other option really is to get the camera back and get it to work on your Mac. It's possible that it was kind of an earlier, it was a very brand new camera, different kind of format, and the Mac didn't recognize it. Mm-hmm. But I find that to be very strange. More likely, it was not in the right setting to connect to the computer.
Well, that could be.
And make sure that when you do this with the computer, don't have other FireWire devices attached. Just connect all the other FireWire devices and do that.
Oh, okay. I probably had the external hard disk connected.
I would go ahead and remove that from the system just to clarify the settings. So first try to do an export and then really whatever is easier for you at that point.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the call.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. It's so funny. This is one of those things that happens to me all the time because I work in a digital arts new media program. Well, we don't do a lot of video footage, but people ask me video file questions all the time, and I know about as much as what you just heard, which is kind of pitiful as a profession, that is. From Pacific Grove, here is Gene. Gene, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I've called in before about I was going to go from the Stone Ages to the modern age, and I finally did. I didn't realize I was going to buy a Mac, and I did. I went in the store, and the guy showed me some PCs that I thought I was going to buy, but he said, this is what I really like. And I got a Leopard.
Uh-huh.
Two questions. One, how do I change that start page in Safari so I don't have to look at Apple when it comes up?
Okay, so you take your Safari, you open it up, and you go to the page that you want to be your home page.
Okay.
Like Google is what mine is.
Okay.
And you go back into preferences, which is under the Safari menu. There's a new, you know, and you go to preferences, and one of the first things is home page and set to current.
Okay.
You push that button.
That was easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you want the hard one?
Sure.
Why does the Mac not let me go in to I still have my CompuServe email account. I went to SBC, so I've got I've got DSL now, so I'm, like I said, I'm modern.
Okay.
But I still kept the CompuServe for a while. Mac will not let me go into that. It gives me a message that it's temporarily unavailable. And I'm saying Mac won't. My Mac here won't. My wife is in a Mac environment, and I gave her my password and everything. It wouldn't let her in.
Hang on a second. When you say Comcast attachment, is this a web interface to Comcast?
Not Comcast, CompuServe.
CompuServe. Is this a web interface to CompuServe?
It's, I go to www.cs.com, and then it gives me, you know, put in my username and my password, and I do that all the time from the library. Another friend of mine did it from her PC.
And in the Mac, you do that, and then what happens?
It gives me a sign. It says, it gives me a big, long list of things, but then it goes, site is temporarily unavailable for access.
That's a lie. Very strange.
How long has that been going on?
Every time I try it.
I mean, for weeks or days?
Yeah, weeks.
Have you tried a different browser?
I would have just been in it. I mean, it's
and
available.
And you have tried it from the library on a Windows machine or something?
Oh, it works. Yeah, it still works, of course.
Something on their end. There's nothing.
Could be a networking problem or a browser problem.
I'm thinking that a malformed URL in Safari is not catching it, or like JavaScript that sets the URL for the form submit.
Mm-hmm. It means the CompuServe hasn't tested for Macs at all.
I know. Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, try Firefox.
Yeah, I would download Firefox.
Okay, why do you guys do that? I mean, Safari seems like a very nice thing. If I download Firefox, will it supplant Safari?
No.
When Firefox launches the first time, it says, do you want to make this a default browser? Just say no and don't ask me again. And you're done. Mm-hmm. But then what you do is just open up Firefox and go to the CompuServe and log in. I would assume it would work on that. I'm surprised it doesn't work with Safari. So a web interface should really be standards compliant and should totally work. But it's possible they're doing something a little funky with.
Well, no, you're right. Because if I remember, I mentioned a while back if I'd stay with CompuServe, the CompuServe was not going to support Vista.
Right. There's a good example.
It's probably them.
It's also possible that you're logging in through a website and it actually starts up some like COM object and it will never work on the Macintosh, which is possible. Miles, what do you think about that?
It's possible that
some ActiveX component is actually necessary to access, because they're saying it's not going to support Vista. So they're doing something weird.
Yeah, except Vista supports ActiveX.
Yeah, why are they doing that?
Unless they put in some new component that worked with the old version.
AOL now? Didn't they merge?
I mean, are we just talking about a web browser for mail, or are we talking about like a network interface?
Yeah. Well, we're talking about a web page interface, but then in Safari it's causing like severe errors. It's very possible that some ActiveX component is being trying to be downloaded and run. I don't know. This is a little wonky to me. I would say get your mail out of there as soon as you can.
Well, that's why I haven't gotten rid of CompuServe yet. I want to make sure I got everything and all that, and then I'm going to say goodbye to them.
Yeah.
But the actual thing it says on the top there, is this any language you understand? CQR/login/login.psp?seamless=NOVL&SITELD=DATLAS
Query string variables.
I think I need to make that a clip for promoting the show.
Okay, guys. That was, by the way,
that's the information that gets sent from your form to the web server. And the web server is supposed to do something intelligent with that information. And clearly it's doing something very unintelligent. It's dying hard and saying, we don't know what you're talking about. But because of that kind of error is only happening on browser-specific issues, they're doing something kind of strange. And so
Browsers are Macs, I mean.
No, they're doing something strange on their web service side that does not support Safari somehow, which is very strange to get that kind of error. That's a very uncommon thing to get for a browser-specific error. So that's why I'd recommend Firefox, because I bet you that it will work on Firefox.
Since I got the new Leopard and I got 250 gigs, I guess I can download Firefox.
No problem.
Lots and lots of room.
No problem. It's really quite easy to download. You download it, it's going to say, you sure want to run this application? So yes, it'll mount like a new temporary hard drive. Uh-huh. And then on there, there'll be a little icon that you drag in your applications folder, and you're done.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the call. Bye, Gene. Bye. Gene is a regular caller from Pacific Grove, and last time he called, he was going to be getting a new computer, and I guess he got a Mac, which is, I guess, cool. He seems to be doing okay, besides CompuServe. All right, let's go to another call. You know, if you'd like to call in with questions and comments, we are waiting for you to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can ask us anything you'd like, really, seriously, anything you'd like. There's a very small percentage of anything that we can answer, but we'll do it our best. The phone numbers, again, are 476-2800, again, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. KUSP. And I think we just lost internet, but let's see. Hal from Santa Cruz. Hal, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. I finally relented and bought an Apple product. I bought an iPod Touch, and I can't figure out how to play an album all the way through. I either have to choose shuffle or a single song, and if I pick a single song, it just keeps repeating eternally.
Well, I believe the interface for the iPod controls is the same on the iPhone as it is for the iTouch. So if you're hitting on the iPod icon on the bottom right-hand corner, you should be able to choose more.
More is the bottom right icon.
Yeah,
and then albums.
And then it shows albums.
Yeah.
And if you click on the album you're curious about and then push play, it should just play through that album.
No, it displays all the songs, or it says shuffle at the top.
And if you press the first song, it doesn't go to the second song?
Nope.
Really? I've never even noticed. Never noticed that.
Well, I'm not saying this is true. My iPod owning friends tell me that, you know, you got to be able to do it. And
yeah, you know what? You got to be able to do it.
Yeah, you got to be able to do it.
Okay, we're doing it right now. Let's see. There is. I don't even have albums. Oh, there it is. Albums.
Yeah, hey. I have.
It worked for me.
I feel so I left just, out. I don't started, have an iPhone.
Well, you won't know if it works unless you listen through the first song. Oh, you pressed the album.
No, I did.
I
started
album?
Up. I actually had a. I have some violent femmes.
All right, I've got. They might be Giants. Flood. Violent Flems, turn that off. You can't put that on air. I don't want swearing to happen.
No. This is at the very end of the song, at Blister in the Sun.
Which has lyrics that I can't...
No, I put it at the very end of the song.
No.
It just started the next song.
Okay, so something's going on. I'll try it with the Flood.
What version of the firmware do you have?
I upgraded it recently. You know, I mean, every time I have it connected to the computer... And I'm connected to the internet. It always asks me if I want to upgrade, if there's a new one.
So. Okay, so you're up to date then.
Yeah, I'm up to date.
We're all testing our iPod, yeah. iPhones.
Yeah, worked.
Yeah, it worked on mine too. But then again, we have iPhones, not iPod touches. Now, I would assume that you've got some setting, which is play only one or shuffle. Inside the settings, and you want to make sure to turn that off?
No, I went to the settings, and I couldn't find anything even closely relevant.
So when you're playing a song, up in the upper left-hand corner and the right-hand corner, when it actually shows like the album art, assuming it has album art, there's two little icons. Make sure both of those are depressed. So they're going to be blue if you've selected them. Make sure you've unselected them. It's in the upper left and upper right.
I'm sorry, how do I select or unselect them?
Just click on the screen. So when I'm playing Birdhouse in Your Soul by Mappy Giants, there's a little icon. You just tap the image section, right? And you'll get a little bar that describes where you are in the song. And you can actually skip ahead and behind. To the left and to the right of that bar is a little infinity loop kind of thing and a little cross loop kind of arrow thing, some arrow symbols. When you depress those, they turn blue. Make sure that they're not blue.
Okay, I haven't got it with me now, so I'll try it when I get home. Thanks, guys.
Good luck. Maybe if I have enough time, I'll take photographs of my phone and show you how that works up on the forums. In fact, you could actually ask on our GeekSpeak forums, and we'll include like a description of how to do it with images and stuff. We do that kind of thing sometimes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the call. That was Hal from Santa Cruz. You know, we are taking questions and comments at technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And... I don't know who the next caller is. Miles, you want to introduce the next caller? Let's see, line four. I'm getting internet.
It was Clyde from Corlitos.
Thank you so much. Clyde from Corlitos. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, my question is also a browser question. I have 10.4.11 on my Mac, and I use Safari 3.something-or-other. And when you've gone to a site, like... It goes from a blue to a kind of a blue-purple, which my 68-year-old eyes doesn't see much difference. And on Netscape and Mozilla, when I was on OS 9, you could change that in the preferences to make it bright red for the ones that you'd already visited.
Ah, okay. So...
Why can't I do that in... other than the fact that they just don't let me.
In Safari?
Yeah.
Okay, so what you're talking about is, it's going to depend on the website you're on.
Well, I'm on Google, but it's on most web...
Most websites, you're right, it's blue and purple.
Yeah.
But he's talking about the ability to override it.
To override it with a default CSS.
Without having to do...
Hacking.
Yeah, I can't do that.
I don't know in Safari, actually.
You can do hacking. You can. But that's okay. We don't know how to do an override in Safari. Firefox does have personal style sheets... But it is a little bit of hacking to do this. What you're asking for does not... What's been happening is that the browsers are trying to... there's a discussion about how much control does the browser have versus how much control should the web services have. And there used to be where, okay, the browser will by default do what the website tells it to do.
Right.
And then you know what, let's give the user more control and be able to override that with some things. And one of those was link color, which is a very common thing. You want, if you always want your links to be blue and you always want them to be underlined, and if you always want them visited ones to be red, for example, which is what you'd like, you can override that. But the way that's done is a little complicated, and it was user preference stuff that I could totally see Apple going, we don't need to do this anymore if a website isn't strong enough. But blue versus purple, you're right, that's not really that different. Miles, got any ideas yet?
Unfortunately, in Firefox, I can see an easy way to just turn off styles altogether so you can read the text, but I'm not seeing anything equivalent to that in Safari,
you might
which actually surprises me.
You might want to try Firefox, but...
Well, my wife has Firefox, and I've looked at it, but I...
It's the same colors.
Yeah, I don't see...
By default, it's going to be the same colors. You're going to have to, like, kind of hack it to get it to be a little more abrasive. Now, one thing, have you played with... Apple's got some really great features for, what is it called, accessibility. So if you go to...
I know what you're talking about.
So what you're going to do is you're going
to... handicap.
It's basically for handicap, but there's a lot of granularity in what it will increase and decrease. Like, it will increase contrast in the screen and things. And that might be a place to play. That's under System preferences, universal access, or accessibility.
It comes out in really big letters.
Now, on Firefox, you can change the visited versus unvisited relatively easy.
So if you're using Firefox, there's a setting?
If you go into there's a content section and there's a colors button, and you can change it right there.
Well,
and it turns out in the new version of Safari, there's a checkbox under the Advanced tab in Properties saying Show Develop Menu in Menu Bar. And that's going to cause, it's going to give you some items, but you can say disable
Miles
styles.
Is describing how to hack your computer.
I have Show Develop Menu in Menu Bar.
But the walking through process will be a little too long, right, Miles?
Well, no, develop, disable styles. And then you have your text without anybody on the web, like your web page developer making
Miles,
things really weird to look
at. His issue is the blue and purple aren't distinguishable enough. If you disable styles, you'll still have blue and purple. You need to change those colors. And to do that, you've got to have a custom CSS file.
So it looks easier in Firefox.
Firefox might be easier.
You're talking about things I don't understand.
That's okay. We do that all the time.
Yeah. So try Firefox if you're willing to cut loose Safari for your browsing.
Well, first practice on your wife's computer so you don't have to install
an
application.
Right. Yeah.
Give it a shot and play in the system. And where was that settings?
If you go under the preferences under the Firefox drop down menus, preferences, and then there'll be a content section up at the very top. And then halfway down, there's a font and colors section.
Okay.
And you'll see a colors button. And it'll be on the right side. It says link colors, and it defaults to blue and purple, and you can change that.
Okay, great.
Hey, thank you so much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. If we didn't get to your call today, please, please join us on our GeekSpeak forums. They're pretty active with questions and answers sometimes, and sometimes those answers are totally right on. In fact, I would argue that the online forums area, sometimes we can answer questions we just can't do on the radio, because the magic of radio, though personal, is not very visual, and sometimes visual explanations are very convenient. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxell. We aren't going to be taking any more calls, but we will be back next week. And one thing I always invite you to do, if you'd like to send us an email or participate in the forums, is to recommend or suggest show ideas for us. You got some ideas on what you'd like for us to cover? We can cover anything, of course. Just go to geekspeak.org and tell us what you think. Let us know what you'd like us to cover on GeekSpeak, and we'll do our best to do so. This morning, the geeks were Miles Elam. Hey, Miles.
Hi.
Thank you so much. And would you do me a favor and read that last thing you've got?
I would love to. Once I find it. This American Life. Sarah Vowles tells the story of one of the grumpiest explorers in the Wild West. Also, John Hodgman explains what happens when a celebrity hunts you down and finds you on your living room couch, pushing 40, and a couple of sizes larger than you want to be. That's This American Life, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Okay, so I podcast This American Life, and I just heard that last night, and that is great. Sarah Vowles is wonderful. She's hilarious. And John Hodgman, of course, is great, and John Hodgman's piece is all about becoming famous and becoming, like, the Mac guy or the PC guy on the Mac commercials and being recognized for that. So I highly recommend listening to that
I'm
tomorrow.
I'm just glad there weren't five names on there I couldn't pronounce.
I know. Wow, it's English, not Latin. What day is it? What time is that on tomorrow?
That is on at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Here on KUSP.
Tomorrow meaning Sunday.
GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Broadcasting HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Ardo. Streaming live and podcasting at KUSP.org. I'm Lyle Troxell. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.